Scotia. How are you on this Monday morning? Hi, and welcome to our show today as we start a new week. It is 9 o'clock right now. I'm Rick Howe with you until 12:30 this afternoon. And here's what we've got coming up on the show for you today. Two members of Halifax City Council are here in our first hour this morning to discuss city matters. Two councillors on the hot seat, and I'll make the introductions in just a moment. After the news at 10, it's time for Science Files. And joining me this morning will be wildlife biologist and conservationist Bob Bancroft. We'll go to the phones at 11 in our first open hour of the week. We call it Manic Monday, and it's your chance to sound off. And as always, anything goes. Hope to hear from you this morning. Again, Manic Monday between 11 and 12. After the news at noon, the Sea Kings will no longer be a common sight over the skies of Halifax. A fly past Friday marked the end of over 50-year service here on the East Coast. We'll talk this afternoon with former Sea King pilot Colonel Lee Meyerhagen. And Halifax historian Blair Bede returns this afternoon with another Halifax history moment for us. Coming up to 9:02 at this hour, two Halifax City Councillors on the hot seat. And joining me in the studio this morning, District 15, Lower Sackville Councillor Steve Craig. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. What a nice Monday morning. I'll tell you, the last Monday of January.
That's right. Yeah, we're into February already.
My
almost
gosh,
here.
And the weather's been great.
Has it?
Compared to 2015,
it has. It's been a bit of a break for the city's snow clearing budget as well.
Well, a little bit.
A little bit, I'm sure.
There you go.
Good to see the other councilor finally joining us here this morning. Let's say hello right now to District 2, Preston Chesacook, Eastern Shore Councilor David Hensby, this one right here.
Hello there, Mr. Howe.
Hello there, Councilor.
I was a little late getting your tea for you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So, you won't be condemned for that at all. Got your brewing paraphernalia on.
Absolutely, sir.
They were booing the heck out of Brad Marchand yesterday.
Oh, well.
He seemed to be having great joy in all of that, though. Big smile on his face the whole time.
Yeah. At least my team will see the playoffs this year.
Well, that's true, and I've acknowledged that.
Who's your team?
seriously.
But I think that this morning's radio sounded very different from not having Mr. Connolly on the air this morning. So I think that Mr. Connolly and Mr. Howell have to get together and lament over the Acadians. They have the same initial CH like the front of the jerseys, Connolly and Howe. So maybe they have a special post-election or post-hockey season show.
Nothing worse than a Bruins fan who gloats. All right?
Oh, a half fan that gloats.
Yeah, but how many Stanley Cups have we got, and how many have you got? We have every good reason to gloat. Yeah. 9:03 is the time here right now. Two city councilors on the hot seat this morning, David Hensby and Steve Craig. And, well, let's start with the Cornwallis issue. We've got the Assembly of Mi'kmaq Chiefs that have pulled out of your review of the whole question of the statue in the South End. And they're demanding, Steve Craig, want to hear your thoughts on this first. The Assembly of Mi'kmaq Chiefs now demanding the immediate removal of the statue of Edward Cornwallis. Your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, Rick, I do want to, and we don't do it enough, acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. And I think that's something that council and a lot of people now are recognizing this. The issue around the Cornwallis statue, the commemoration, is a huge one, especially for Indigenous people. And I appreciate it. I don't pretend to know the true significance and the emotion around this issue. I want to learn, though. I need to understand, and others need to be understood, and that's where we are with this. So what led us to this point, I don't know. I certainly want to find out, because we are, as a council, taking every effort, in our view, to improve the situation, to take a look at the Truth and Reconciliation's reports, to look at the UN Declaration of Rights of the Indigenous People. We're doing all of that. Apparently, we're not doing it quickly enough. Now, we need to be able to understand that. I'm not saying we are doing it quick. I'm not saying we're not. We need to understand, and to do that, we need to be able to talk with each other.
But I wonder what your thoughts are of the demand to have this statue brought down immediately.
Well, it's one of those things when people demand, like you just demanded the question of me, what's behind that? So what's understanding? What is it that we need to understand? There are a lot of things, demands that people make that I go immediately have a response to. This is one that I don't. This is one I truly don't. But I need to understand what is going on. We as council had thought we were on a path towards looking at this particular issue. And apparently the other parties don't feel that we are on the right path. Now we need to understand what that right path is, and we have to talk about it.
David Hensby, let's hear your thoughts on this. First on the reaction or the decision by the Assembly of Mi'kmaq Chiefs to withdraw from your committee review, and secondly, their demand that that statue must come down immediately.
First of all, my disappointment about them withdrawing from the participation of the special panel. We've asked this back in, I think it was last summer, and I made a suggestion. It would be kind of nice to have this underway by October, being Aboriginal or Indigenous Peoples History Month, whatever, and that never occurred. And then now into the season, and they finally did make a recommendation for their participation, but there were some concerns about certain individuals, should they be on the panel or not, because of their past history. But then I guess when those objections were raised, I guess the Assembly of Chiefs felt that if you don't like our, I assume, if you don't like our recommendations, we'll withdraw entirely. And having this ultimatum, we'll take down the statue immediately. I find that it's a little heavy-handed, and I think that we need to have at least an opportunity for dialogue. I've always said from the beginning, I have no problem with relocating the statue, but just removing it and keeping it down forever, I'm not in favor of that. But I think that I've always said there should be a spot of more relevance for that statue. I've always said either the waterfront, where it came afoot to on the shores here, or to establish a garrison town, or perhaps at Royal Artillery Park, right across the street from the Citadel, looking at the Citadel Hill, you know, because that's why he came here to establish a garrison town back in the days of the British and French wars. So
where do we go from here then? I mean, what happens then?
I really don't know. I think this is some of the dialogue we're going to be having tomorrow.
Absolutely. We will be talking about this as a council tomorrow. I know that everybody is interested in moving forward. We need to be able to establish and maintain constructive relationships with our Indigenous peoples. And I don't pretend to know everything, as I said earlier, about the particular issues and the injustices. We now acknowledge it's been acknowledged of the injustices to our Indigenous peoples, not only here in Canada, but throughout the world. You know, you take a look at basically the Euro-Christian conquering my way or no way attitude, and that's bad. We've come to learn that. We've talked about education. I've learned more as a counselor in the last 5 years about rights and freedoms and things that I thought were there because I was taught that they were there and they were never mentioned otherwise than I did ever. And so that causes me great concern. And we'll talk about it tomorrow. It's going to be a good, heartfelt debate tomorrow to figure out what and how to proceed. But certainly I do not blame anybody for the way this is turning out at this point, because it is a process. It's going to take long. It's something we've not done before. And to open up the discussion and the dialogue requires numerous parties.
Sam Austin, Councillor Hensby, suggested in the Metro this morning that it's possible council could make a decision yesterday to take that issue down. Do you think that that's likely?
I would have to have the dialogue with colleagues first.
It's certainly possible.
I will not jump to any conclusions.
But again, should there not be a wider kind of discussion involving the residents of this city in regards to this whole question?
The panel process would have provided that opportunity.
And so can you make a decision without that wider representation, without that wider discussion?
We can, but it's not preferable.
No.
Obviously we can. We have the authority to do that. Now, to engage and to work with each other and build those constructive relationships rather than unilaterally deciding something is what we wanted to do.
Is it a foregone conclusion that that statue is going to come down?
No, of course not.
David Hensby?
Of course not.
But it seems to be, again, what the Mi'kmaq Assembly of Chiefs is demanding and what other activists are demanding as well. In fact, there's a rally planned again on Sunday coming up this weekend. The South End Park, and I expect that we'll see something similar we saw the last time they rallied out there.
You know, certainly when it comes to confrontation, it's in nobody's interest. Nobody wins when it comes to confrontation, and certainly I'll do everything that I can to have that avoided.
Do you fear that that's possible?
Yes.
David?
I hope cooler heads will prevail.
You're awfully quiet, Hensby, on this issue here.
I said my piece in the past.
Yeah. There's a time and a place, Rick. You know, you're talk show is not the place at this. This is a very important issue.
Oh,
I know people want to get involved and understand. However, we do have the responsibility to, as a group tomorrow, 17 of us, to have this discussion.
The Chiefs have a point, though, in that this has been taking an awfully long time here. And they came forward with their four recommendations. As far as I understand, the city hasn't presented its recommendations yet to be members of that panel. Have they done that yet?
We've concluded that.
You've chosen your four?
Yes.
All right. Their complaint, again, their reason they say that they're withdrawing from being a participant in this is that the city's taking too long to come to a decision. What do you say
to
that?
No. We provided an opportunity, like I said, last summer when we first established the committee, asked for introductions or opportunity to participate. I even said back then it would be nice to have it done during the month of October, during the History Month, and it never occurred.
So why hasn't it happened yet?
Well, they have to go through their own processes. You know, the Assembly Chiefs had to go through their consultation of who they should put forward and stuff like that. They had their own probably debates of what names to put forward, but they took their time to get their names to the table. They finally got them to us to review. And as I said earlier, there was some resistance or some hesitation because of individuals on that list. So I guess this is just retaliatory reaction, is that if you don't want our list, I guess we're not going to participate at all.
As we speak here, Dan just tweeted to say, now we get to see if the council will represent their voters or will pander to special interest groups. What do you say to that, Steve Gray?
I think that's unfair characterization because
everybody's
special. We've got a total population. We represent everybody. And, you know, sometimes you don't get into a situation to say, you know what, son, I like you more than your sister. It doesn't happen that way. That's a rather simple view.
There was a group of junior high students, I believe, just see if I can find this right here, who sent in a letter to the mayor and council. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it at least went to the mayor, suggesting an alternative. What they suggested is that you take the statue of Cornwallis off the pedestal, put it down at ground level, and create three or four other statues, one of a Mi'kmaq leader, one of an Acadian leader, I don't call the third figure.
African Nova Scotia.
Africa, thank you very much, David. And make it more of an interpretive kind of park down there in the south end. What are your thoughts on that, Counselor?
Sounds like a great idea.
Is that a good compromise?
Well, how can you arrive at a compromise if you don't have parties speaking? Right? So council can make that decision, sure. However, that's not in the spirit of truth and reconciliation here.
But it seems that the Assembly of Chiefs isn't interested right now in any spirit of reconciliation. They want this thing down. Can you make a decision without involving them at all?
Of course we can. That's not my preference.
Yeah. Well, the mayor says they're going to try and extend, again, an invitation to the Assembly of Bangkok Chiefs to rejoin the effort. Whether or not that'll be successful or not remains to be seen.
Well, I know we're certainly open. We really want to engage the community in this, and we're moving forward. We've done a lot in the municipality over the last couple of years. We have even the Police Diversity Working Group. Deborah Eisen is an elder who's chairing that group. We have an advisor in our Diversity and Inclusive Area Group. We've done a lot in this last number of years to recognize.
In the Office of African Nova Scotia Affairs Integration Office, we're now hiring an Acadian person to help with the French translations for our Francophone community. And we're also trying to take measures with our Recreation Department in regards to the Muslim community, trying to make sure that their needs are also being addressed, especially during recreational facilities.
As chair of the Police Commission, I requested the province to submit somebody from the Indigenous community to sit on the Board of Police Commissioners. So we've done a lot. This issue here, though, is something that I truly want to and need to understand more, because we do have to move forward. And yes, it takes time. We're talking centuries of injustices here with our Indigenous peoples. So for 6 months or so, I can understand why the frustration might be brewing. However, we do have to talk. We have to sit down and we have to come up with something that's constructive.
He is Steve Craig. My other guest is David Hensby. Two city councilors on the hot seat. It's 9:15. And if you've got a comment or a question for either council this morning, give us a call at 902-405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. More with the two councilors right after this quick break. 9:18 on this Monday morning. City Councilors Steve Craig and David Hensby, my guest, are two city councilors on the hot seat. And if you've got a comment or a question this morning, give us a call at 902-405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. Eric, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. How are you? First of all, Mr. Hensby, I'd like to address your comment that the indigenous chiefs were being heavy-handed. My good friend, the government of Nova Scotia and the Europeans have been heavy-handed towards our Mi'kmaq brothers and sisters for the last 200 or 300 or 400 years. That's number one. Number two, Mr. Craig, I appreciate very much you talked about the social injustice that our Native brothers and sisters have said, and you also said, and it's the truth, this is Mi'kmaq territory, unceded. They have every right to demand that the statue of Edward Cornwallis be removed from that park because, really, that is their land.
Eric, let me ask you a question here. You've waited how many years? When did that statue go up there? 1931, I believe, around there. You've been waiting this long. What's the problem with waiting a few more weeks, perhaps a few more months, to let this council, this this panel, address this issue?
Well, in number one, you know, it's been there for a long time, but so has the, to draw you an analogy, so has the sexual misconduct and unequal pay towards women. And that's coming to the forefront now, which is a good thing. The Mi'kmaq people are starting to realize that they have a lot of rights, and I think that's perhaps now people are stepping forward. And we have a responsibility as a society because we should all be equal partners here in the province of Nova Scotia, and we should be working together. I really don't appreciate Mr. Hensby saying we. You're not in charge anymore, Mr. Hensby. Europeans aren't in charge anymore. If we're going to have true reconciliation, then what we need is to move forward and look in a very responsive manner to the needs of all Nova Scotians.
I appreciate the call, Eric. Thanks very much. Councillor Hensby, want to comment?
Well, thank you for your call there, Eric. I should have asked, are you a homeowner? Are you planning to repatriate your property as well? You know, the whole question is how far does this unceded Mi'kmaq territory argument go? You know, is it on public lands only? What about privately owned properties? You know, how far do you want to make this argument be taken? You know, there's a lot of things we can talk about history, but we have to realize that through the British and French Wars, and we, our country has been founded on the foundations that the British won the war, the battles of Plains of Abraham and everything else, and we became a British colony. And from that, our commonwealth was created, our way of governance has been created, our civil laws have been created all that way. Do we reverse everything now after 300 years? It's a good question.
Steve Craig?
To recognize the injustices is quite important. And it is, you know, whether there are treaties or not, certainly history shows that they weren't honored. They weren't honored. We need to be able to work together, though. What's changed in the last 60 years, couple of centuries, is the awareness and the acceptance that there have been injustices, not only for the Indigenous people of Canada, but worldwide. We need to be able to sit down, and to sit down, we have to talk face-to-face and work it out. And again, to try to reach that balance, that harmony that we all strive for and we all talk about, but very few people step up and actually take the first step to make it better. So, you know, I need to understand. I want to understand, and you know, I don't criticize or condemn anybody for their opinions. I may not agree with them, but I certainly don't publicly criticize and condemn.
Ashley just tweeted to say she doesn't care if Cornwallis is taken down, but she says, "Can someone please explain to me how the statue being removed will improve the day-to-day life of local Aboriginals? I mean, why don't we focus on clean water for all reserves?" Just asking, she writes. Here this morning, let's go back to the phones. Randy, good morning to you.
Yeah, I take an opposite, a different view than your first caller. I agree with David's opinion, or comment rather, that, this is heavy-handed. And as you said, Rick, it's becoming a demand, and I don't think anything is going to be accomplished by demands. And I mean, I'm getting a little tired of the entire thing. You know, I have to be honest, I have a great deal of respect for the indigenous people. They've been here and we know the history, but all of a sudden the indigenous people want all the wrongs undone overnight, and it can't be done. We are in Canada, and they, the indigenous people, aren't the only people that are receiving injustice, for the lack of a right word. Like right today, we're talking a year since the Muslim shooting in Montreal. You know, there's so many other things and what I call the black history. And like right now, this is an anniversary of the Muslim people. I think some more attention should be paid to that. And let's let Cornwallis rest in peace and leave him where he is and just learn from it.
Thanks for the call. And again, a number of people commented on the suggestion from those group of junior high students that, you know, that plan to take the Cornwallis statue off the pedestal, put it on ground level, and build some new statues there and make it more of an interpretive park. That seems to be a possible compromise on this issue. Whether it's acceptable to the indigenous people, I'm not sure yet.
I don't know, but we have to find out. And in order to find out, we have to sit down and talk.
9:25 is the time here on a Monday morning with City Councilors David Hensby and Steve Craig. Steve, you're the chairman of the Police Commission. I know we've talked to you in week before, about the missing evidence, the drugs and money evidence from the police evidence locker. And you told us last week that you are satisfied that, indeed, you agree with police that you do not believe that there was any wrongdoing involved in any of this.
That's correct.
But my question is, police haven't any evidence to suggest yes or no to that. Oh, it's only their belief that they say.
Well, lack of evidence isn't indication of a crime of collusion or corruption.
But I wonder how deep did they go? I mean, the audit that was done, would not an independent audit have been perhaps a better route to go?
I had a discussion with the then Minister of Justice about the province being involved, and it was indicated that at that point there was no desire or no need they felt to have an independent audit. We have professional people looking at this. This is a systemic thing in so much as it goes back to amalgamation. Different systems, different reporting, different training, different people, different facilities. And it was all a convolution of bad management practices, bad procedures. So even we say that something is missing, what we aren't confident in is that the number that we're comparing against is really the number, because the record keeping was so bad. So I've seen no evidence of any collusion or corruption. I'm very confident that we've done this audit. The audit will be done ongoing every year. They'll report to the Board of Police Commissioners. We have people in place now whose job it is to monitor, to train, to take custody of the evidence, to look at the chain of evidence as it moves from one location to another, from one individual to another, to make sure that when it's put into the records, it's actually put in correctly, and that there's double checks in some cases. We've got all those procedures and policies now being put into place. We've got the staff and the management who are capable and quite confident. I've got confidence in them that they are going to do the job, and we'll have the quality controls in place to make sure that we never run into this situation again. And if there is collusion or corruption, that we'll pick it up real quick.
Police in Halton, Ontario, though, had a similar situation on their hands and brought in Toronto police to do an independent investigation. Here, we relied on our own police department to investigate itself. Some questions about that. Perhaps conflict of interest, even. You don't agree?
I don't.
9:28 is our time. Steve Craig and David Hensby, my guests here this morning. We're going to take a break. We've got a news update coming up for you in just a couple of minutes. Then we'll hear more from the two counselors. And if you've got a question for either, give us a call at 902-405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. We'll be back right after the news. 9:32 here on this Monday morning. City Councilors Steve Craig and David Hensby, my guests here. Let's go to the phones, and Tim's got a question for us this morning. Morning, Tim. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. Just on the items of the that's missing from the police locker, you know, needless to say, it's a serious issue. We're talking about pills, marijuana, cocaine, and cash. It seems like Mr. Craig is trying to be dismissive of the issue without understanding the seriousness, and I say that in a respectful way. Obviously, there's a legal aspect to this, and, you know, there is a conflict of interest of the police investigating the police, and there's people facing, you know, trial, and yet the evidence may not be there. So I'm not sure how he becomes so dismissive of the issue.
All right. Steve Craig, you want to respond to that?
Oh, Tim, thanks. I don't intend to sound dismissive, and certainly am not. This is a huge, serious issue. And looking at it from a factual point of view, a situational point of view, I'm not dismissing or sounding, I may sound dismissive. Again, that's not my intent. It was looked at seriously. I talked to the province about it. We had other people look at it. Our lawyers were involved. So many, many people had eyes on this and looked at this. So not to be dismissive, the fact of the matter is we cannot reconcile it. There's no consideration, evidence of collusion, of theft. What prompted this, by the way, was a situation where there was a member charged and looked at for missing evidence, and that started it off. So the individual was caught, looked at it, and then Chief Blay initiated the full inventory. And from that, we looked at the inventory, what the results were. We audited the process, the procedures, the people, and all of that. So no, not to be dismissive. This is very serious, and the Board of Police Commissioners and the Halifax Regional Police and the RCMP have taken a great hit in the confidence of our people, of our citizens, and we take that very seriously. So no, it's one of those things where we need to be able to be better and do better and be seen to be better and perceived to do better. This happened. It's concluded now. I'm confident that we're going to do better in the future.
One more question on that issue from Jim Hoskins here this morning. Jim, good morning.
Wouldn't be
good
complete morning, without Rick. Jim Hoskins.
Okay, first of all, if I may, in reference to Chairman Craig, Chairman Craig is an honorable man, and I don't think he tried to mislead the public, or I don't think that his intentions were out of line. But I will say that they had equal opportunity when they spoke with the minister. I wrote the minister myself and requested a complaint, which I was entitled to do under the Police Act. Anyway, the minister got back to me, and, you know, basically my information from the minister at that time was they had spoken with the chair of the commission. And when you look at the whole process here, basically the commission never did ask for an outside inquiry. The chief of police never asked for an outside inquiry. So they got a pass on that one from the minister. My second comment is that what the chair and the board failed to realize, and even the chief, is that they've affected the perceptions of the police department and the board, not only by your civilian members of the public, but many former and present members of the police department. They were looking for an independent audit so they could walk around in public knowing that there's an independent voice that's going to come in and look at this, knowing full well the end result may very well be what it is, except that nobody can say that there wasn't somebody else or things weren't stolen. And that's the bottom line. You may never be able to prove that, but you can't unequivocally say that you don't think there was. Any auditor that did that is not being responsible. So I'll go back to it again and say to the commissioner or to the chair, you had the chance to ask for an outside audit. You didn't do that on behalf of the board. The chief had the chance, and he didn't do it on behalf of the board. So me as a former member and many of my peers and the public are looking at this as that audit has no veracity, no credibility, because it was not done from an independent point of view. That was the perfect storm to have one done.
All right,
it went by the wayside.
I'm going to stop you there. I want to hear what Steve Craig has to say. Thank you, Jim. Craig, Steve?
Well, you take a look at this, and that was the decision of the day, and to avoid the conversations that we have, maybe in retrospect, that we could have requested an external audit by another party. Now, when I talk with a minister and there's no indication of the interest in that, to me, that's, you know, the minister is quite capable under the act to instigate and to initiate something, and they did not do that. So I'm comfortable with the way it unfolded, and sorry about the perception. We have many people who have been involved in police services over the last 30-some-odd years who also can initiate a complaint. They can initiate a criminal charge, and there are different ways to go. You can go directly to the police commission. You can go to the Department of Justice. There are many other opportunities to raise an issue and to have an official complaint if any member had ever seen anything criminal, then they have an obligation to do that as well. So it's not only the perception of what's out there in the audit of missing evidence, but also there's a duty of all serving members and civilian forces to take sure and make sure things are done right. And I don't think I've seen any evidence or am knowledgeable of any former members making actual complaints or laying charges.
9:38 is the time. Let's talk a little sports here right now.
Go Bruins.
Well, besides that, let's talk about the potential CFL team here in Halifax. Where are we at in regards to that? Any new development there of the...
Still left in the hands of the private developer and stuff, and trying to put a proposal together for their own team franchise. I've seen stuff in the news about looking at possibility of should they offer season ticket sales.
They're thinking about that. Yeah.
So if they start moving forward into a public sense, I think they'll see what type of public support there may be for such a franchise to come here.
Yeah.
I personally believe I think it would take off quite well.
I agree, but they're in a little bit of they've prompted a Twitter debate, I guess I'll call it that. The CFL group that's behind this bid pitched the idea of calling the football team the Halifax Explosions. And that has set off, as I said, a real Twitter debate from people basically slamming the idea. One person writes that they're profiting off the deaths of 2,000 people. It's in really poor taste. Your thoughts on this, David? I know you've had comments in the past in regards to potential.
I think the use of that name would be highly inappropriate. Megan Leslie made a joke on your show one time, and I chastised her for that. I said it's highly inappropriate. I think that they're talking about having a positive naming contest, but I think that the name has to be reflective of Atlantic Canada. And I think the Atlantic Schooners was a name that was developed about 30, 40 years ago. I think they bought the franchise rights to that. So they have that ability to use that name if they wish, but they may put out there as a naming contest just to try to drive up some more fan support and community ideas. But I think whatever name they do choose, it should be reflective of Atlantic Canada, not just Halifax or Nova Scotia.
Steve Craig, your thoughts on the Halifax Explosions as a potential name for a football team here?
I don't think that's a good idea. It's something I wouldn't vote for. It's one of those things where when you start to go back into the meaning and the genesis of that, you go, no, that was a devastating time 100 years ago. And certainly it's something that you wouldn't want to be reminded of in that way as sport and entertainment.
The expectation is that the public, the taxpayers of the city, will be asked to contribute in some way. Are you okay with that?
I think it's going to come down to location. Whatever that location may be, we may be asked to provide municipal services right up to the property site. Like we do that right now when we build the industrial parks. We put all the infrastructure in, water lines, sewer lines, roads, power lines, street lighting, that's all done by the municipality as we sell industrial park land. So I see there's no different as that.
Yeah. No, and I agree with David. However, if you're asking, are we going to fund a stadium, that's a different story.
Yeah.
And I'm not in favor of that.
You may be asked to do that. You realize
of course.
That. Yeah.
You could be asked questions and given comments all the time on that.
I wouldn't mind seeing perhaps a tax holiday for a decade, you know, give them a 0% property tax the first year, 10% the second year, and have it elevate upwards after the end of the 10 years. So
there are other ways that we can contribute without actual cash and handing over cash.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's also a bit of a push on for an NHL-sized rink at the skating oval on the Halifax Common. I like the idea that this Ryan O'Quinn is pushing here. I had him on the show last week, and he talked about putting down a concrete slab in the middle of the Amara Oval and making an NHL-sized rink.
I think that'd be fun.
It would be fun.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep, we have.
But it's going to take an affirmative decision from council before this moves ahead.
Well, let's see what comes forward. It's just wonderful. I'd like to be able to see that people out there playing hockey and the way we used to, David used to, and you used to years ago, right?
Years ago.
Years ago.
Underline years ago, yes, indeed.
But maybe we put out for a naming contest. Maybe Tim Hortons will take the thing, be like the be the hole in the donut around the oval, filling it in.
But Ron mentioned all kinds of possibilities. It could be used to, 12 months of the year. But he also talked about in the winter months, besides the, people
You've
living.
Got lacrosse, okay. Yeah. So in the summer, you've got lacrosse. We're looking for, always looking
you're,
for
yeah,
places
that's right.
to
you're
play
you're
lacrosse.
Involved with lacrosse.
You've got
don't forget broom ball.
Hockey, broom ball. Roller, there are so many things.
Ring roller heads. Derby, even.
Yeah.
He also talked about perhaps, you know, a winter classic, you know, Halifax Mooseheads versus Cape Breton Screaming Eagles came out in the open of the Halifax Cup. I think that'd be a great idea.
Wouldn't that be great for them, too, the young folks doing that?
Yes, indeed. Let's go back to the phones. David, good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to make a comment and then a question of Mr. Craig. First comment would be, as I generally was brought up, that if something goes missing, unless it can walk away, there's a horse down. Now, there either was a horse down or there is a horse down. Okay, next thing I'd like to ask the question of Mr. Craig. You were driving down the road in your car, Mr. Craig, and you got stopped by the police and you were issued a ticket. And you went the next day or the next week and you went to court. And the judge was the police officer. Would you find that a conflict of interest?
All right, David.
Well, the system set up that's not going to happen, so that's a hypothetical. So,
yeah, it's a hypothetical question. Of course it is, but I just want your opinion. Would you think that would be a conflict of interest?
But your point being what, David, though?
Yeah.
Is it a conflict of interest or is it not a conflict?
Yeah, but no, but the point of your question, I mean, what are you getting at?
What I'm getting at is earlier suggested that having the police
investigate
their own self is not a conflict of interest. So it's a hypothetical question in regards to that.
All right. Councillor Craig?
So if I thought it was a conflict of interest in the context that you're saying, I'd say no.
But you don't believe that, again, having police investigate themselves in this regard was a conflict of interest at all?
It's not the same police doing it. So my brother-in-law was internal affairs for Toronto Police, completely independent. So you've got people doing independent audits all the time, even in their own organization. In businesses, you have people responsible for doing audits internally. And I don't have an issue with this. I do not.
9:45 is the time here right now on this Monday morning. City Councilor Steve Craig and David Hensby with me in the studio, and we'll be back with more right after this. 9:47. City Councilor Steve Craig and David Hensby with me here in the studio. And Scott's on the line with a comment or question this morning. Hi, Scott.
Morning. How you doing, panel?
Doing all right.
Good morning.
You have a comment for us?
Well, I got a question for you and the panel. If we built a stadium, what would it be doing today?
You mean what do we do outside of the 8 or 9 CFL home games we might get, basically?
Yeah, what would the stadium be doing today or tomorrow or the day after?
Yeah, good question. David, if I recall correctly, when we were in the running for the Commonwealth Games, the stadium was part of that whole plan. And wasn't there a study done that suggested that stadium would be used something like 75% of the year, something along those lines?
It all depends if you have a covered stadium or an open-air stadium. Those would have different uses. But in the wintertime, if it's an open-air stadium, you can probably have outdoor events and activities. You know, anywhere from, depending if it's snow or not, you can have obstacle courses, being snowmobiles and all-terrain vehicles, or you can have cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. It all depends on what type of events you can put on in the wintertime. But in the summertime, or spring, summer, fall, it would have been soccer, football, basketball. You can put a hardcore court down and stuff like that. You can do a lot of things that they're volleyball is another thing that you can put out there. It's all kinds of things besides concerts and trade shows and things like that. So,
Steve, Craig, are you okay with a stadium if indeed it was used a lot, or what if it wasn't used hardly at all?
Well, it depends. First of all, it won't be municipally owned, so it'd be up to the business running it, whether they're going to keep it active, engaged, having a good return on their investment. That's up to them. And that's what I don't want to get into as a municipal politician. I'm not going to get into their business and certainly not going to subsidize it. So I'm not even going to suggest what it might be used for.
So there's no chance in the world that this would be a municipally owned stadium, is what you're telling me here.
I'd never vote for it, no.
Yeah. And again, I get the sense that not many in council would support that, and indeed many residents would be somewhat reluctant to sign on to that kind of issue as well. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, councillors.
Good morning. Good morning, constituent.
Refers to property taxes. And, in December, I was reading in the paper, and then I heard also on the show that the property tax this year would go up about 1.9%. And then last Monday, somebody was on this very show and said 1.9% would be the minimum. The following day in the newspaper, I see, well, we have a $1.4 million wish list. Well, I wish, my question being, one is, well, first of all, let me give you background. I only got a 2% raise in my pensions, and thank goodness it wasn't Canadian. I am a CFA, and my pensions are from the state, so I got a little better deal. I didn't get $15 like most Canadians did here. But where I'm going with this is, what is this? What is this here wish list? And why don't I know about it? Why it wasn't published at the time? And why 1.9 is already at 2.2, which exceeds what I got in a pension? And ergo, I'm losing money. I've lost money year after year.
Let's hear what the council is
going to work.
Tony, just let you know that all the budget documents are available online. You can look at all the documents as council members, get them and study them. Our council debates and budgets are also online. You can watch them live stream on your computer, or you can also check the archives and review the meeting itself and replay it back. All these are discussions in regards to services out there that we'd like to see or maintained or enhanced. We have not finalized the budget, so there may be some more give and take yet to be done. So we're looking, going through the budgets. We're being told what's being expected, hopefully, for service delivery this year. But if we see some deficiencies, that's what the wish list is about. Could we do a little bit extra here, a little bit more there? And the question is, if we add this to the wish list, we haven't determined yet if what's going to come off the budget or what other adjustments there could be. So those things are still have to be worked out, but our target was to have a 1.9% maximum property tax increase. That's what we're hoping for, and so still work yet to be done on that.
But that Tony's right in regards with the wish list; it's up over 2% now, and yeah, this hasn't been finalized yet.
No, but, not at all. Yeah. So as far as not knowing about it, the process is very open. I know David tweets out what meetings are happening. I do as well, many other of my colleagues. It's available on the site. All the documents are available before the presentations. We have a series that started in probably October right through now until March, when we'll finally look at the budget. And throughout that process, various business units come to council and they present their budget request and their recommendation, and then to go forward and do something and to develop it further. Also, though, as part of that, there's the public participation. So each business unit is presented, and then the public is asked to come and talk. And that's the way it's been for quite some time. So you have the opportunity to go, listen to it, make your comments known, and hear the debate around that. Now, the wish list is something that's beyond what the staff have in their recommendations, that individual counselors or council as a group say, you know, we think this is really important. We ought to take a look at that. But no decision is made at that point. So what you have is a running wish list, if you will, on top of what's been recommended at this point. And that's where the 2% number comes up. Now, that likely is going to fall back.
There you go, Tony. It's just a discussion right now.
Yeah, okay. I like that. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Two issues that go to council tomorrow night or tomorrow. What time's council sit tomorrow?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. All right, the two issues on the agenda. One is a proposal from Councillor Wayne Mason basically suggesting it's time for the municipality to take over social housing from the province. Your thoughts on this, David Hensby?
I had some reluctancy when we first proposed that because I thought here we are getting back into the realm of provincial responsibility. But I look back on our property taxes. We do pay a 15% charge on our mandatory charges to the province for social housing. And the question is, so all these federal programs are coming down, is the province have the ability and capacity to deliver on social housing? And we believe they're challenged with health care and a few other things like that. So perhaps we could substitute the provincial standing. So we're just looking at that as a possibility. So hopefully we can take that, and also with that request comes perhaps we should keep some of the mandatory provincial charges that are on our taxes now, that we should just redirect that ourselves with the housing initiative. So hopefully it won't cost us any more.
Steve Craig, your thoughts on this one?
Housing in this municipality is a key issue for all of us. And municipal councillors get the questions and concerns all the time, and rightfully so. So in some other municipalities throughout Canada, housing actually falls under the municipality. And it was with amalgamation, I believe, David, you were there, you could correct me if I'm wrong, in that part of the service exchanges. We got roads and they got housing, the province that is.
We didn't get all the roads. We just got the urban roads, and they also took over community services and welfare assistance and stuff. So that took a 10-year phase for that to occur. But there was a service exchange, and basically there was the municipality got out of social services.
So now what we're seeing is a huge awareness and action in the municipality to take a look at homelessness, housing, affordable housing, basic income, all of these types of things that we're looking at now. And the question came up is, can we do it better? Forgetting about the funding for a second, because the funding would have to follow. Yeah. But can we do it better? Can we provide more attention to the details that are required through the administration? Don't know the answer to that. That's the request that's coming tomorrow.
That'll be an interesting debate.
It will be.
Yeah, since we do the land use bylaws and zoning and stuff, if the question was, can we go a little further? If we want affordable housing and some of these development agreements, do we have the ability to enforce that or not? This will just be part of that.
The community group Imagine Bloomfield is hoping for a decision soon now. They're saying that, like the Assembly of Mi'kmaq Chiefs, the council is taking an awful long time to make a decision.
I would have to beg to differ. There's also consultation requested and demanded by the community. We have the Imagine Bloomfield process go on for almost a decade. If you ask me, this is long overdue. I had hoped that there would have been a decision done a decade ago on this facility, in this process, this property, but... I think it needs to be dealt with. There's been some dialogue that perhaps the Acadia School Board could possibly use the site, but is the site conducive enough for the school by current standards? I really don't know. But I personally believe something needs to be done with the site.
Steve Craig, you agree?
Oh, I agree. Something has to be done with the site. There's been a lot of attention back and forth, initiatives looked at and given up on, if you will. And it is a process. It's so important, though, to the community at large to take a look at that site and do something with it. And many people, David mentioned the French School Board, CSAP, had an interest. Other people have an interest. So they're looking at what's available, what can be done, and what have you. So there's a lot of interest. And I think this particular one has gone on way too long.
Just before we wrap things up, David Hensby, you've got a connection with the Progressive Conservative Party of Nova Scotia, your former MLA, PC MLA. Just wondering your thoughts on the revelations in regards to Jamie Bailey last week.
Shocked and surprised.
Really?
Yes.
How surprised?
The mayor said to me, if I gave you a list of 40 politicians in the province that could be accused of sexual assault or harassment, whatever the case may be, he would not have been on that list.
All right. I appreciate both of you here this morning. Thank you very much, Councillor Hensby.
I just want to acknowledge that the new... HRM's Library and Recreation Services Facility, Muscat Albert Harbor, open on the weekend. It's come on down and check out the new renovated facility.
Oh, new library out of Muscat Albert Harbor.
Yep.
Excellent. Councillor Craig?
Thank you very much, Rick. And tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, Knox United Church, there's an open forum on housing in the Sackville-Beaverbank area, and all are welcome.
Well, and a meeting Wednesday night in regards to the Common Master Plan as well, is there not?
Absolutely.
Busy times ahead. Council tomorrow, too. Thank you both. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick.
Councillors Steve Craig and David Hensby here on the hot seat this morning, 2 minutes before 12. Getting a little ahead of myself here. 2 minutes before 10 on a Monday morning. We're going to take a break for a news update. On the other side of the news, it's time for Science Files, and wildlife biologist Bob Bancroft will be my guest. We'll hear more from Bob after the news, and that is coming up next.